So the evangelists, Mark, Matthew and Luke, all have recorded the temptations of Christ. And they do it in a very similar way, but all at the same time as Jesus as his ministry unfolds. So preceding Jesus' temptation, we have his baptism. And then the words that are said in the Gospels, Behold my son, the beloved. My favour rests on him. So Jesus is identified in the crowd as the Son of God. Now, if he were to take up the label and put it on as a uniform, I'm the Son of God, that will have distanced Jesus from being approachable, as it were, because God is, in one sense, unapproachable. But as the Son of God, he was also man. And keep that in mind when we talk about the temptations that Christ underwent, because Jesus, in one sense, needed to do that so that his divinity could be seen through his humanity. And his humanity is the experience of temptation that we all go through, every single one of us, to varying degrees, at varying times in our life. And so when Jesus talks about pain and sorrow and an experience of evil and the language even of the devil, he knows what he's talking about because he, like us, have experienced that. And through the course of our life, we too very often end up out in the wilderness. Now, when we end up out in the wilderness, it is because we have usually moved away from God, not the other way around. We often say that, don't we, that if God seems a long way away, guess who moved? So when we understand the divinity of Jesus coming through because of what he experienced in the temptations, we can actually start to put a shape and a face to the Son of God. We can identify him with arms and legs and hair, in whichever way works for you. But we know that he has come closer because of that experience. In Matthew's gospel, Matthew uses mountains a lot. He uses them to highlight the interaction and the revelation of God to man. And God with man. Next week you're going to hear about Jesus going up the Mount for Transfiguration. Today, Matthew has shifted the order of the temptations around, if you compare them to Luke, for example. And he has Jesus experiencing the third temptation on a high mountain, we're told, where all big things happen with God for Matthew. It's one of his very, very common themes. He has Jesus going out into the wilderness. The wilderness for the Mediterranean people was the place of the spirits. It's interesting that Matthew doesn't record, nor does Mark, that Jesus was wearing blue. Blue was the colour that was worn, a hard colour to come by, but it was the colour that was worn to ward off spirits. And the Mediterranean people were very, not attached to the evil spirits, but they were very aware. It was a huge part of their life, the presence of evil through spirits. And the place where these spirits dwelled was always in the desert or the wilderness. That's not so much our experience. And even if you go to the Mediterranean these days, you will see little symbols in blue, quite often with the eye. The little seeing eye in the middle of it. And people wear them as amulets and all sorts of things. When you go to a hotel, quite often still on your pillow rather than chocolates will be one of those little blue evil eyes, they're called. So keep your eye out on that next time, excuse the pun, next time you're travelling. And remember this sermon. It's to ward off temptation historically for the Mediterranean people. But Jesus, we're not told, was in blue. So neither here nor there. We're told of the experience and the depth of the experience. First temptation with food. He went out for 40 days. And whenever the number 40 comes up, we know that it's going to be connected to Hebrew history. So the Israelites spent 40 years wandering through the desert. 40 is the symbol of a generation. So they've gone for 40 years through the desert. Moses went up the mountain to meet with God before he brought down the commandments, the law of God. He was up there for 40 days and 40 nights. You know the story of Noah, 40 days and 40 nights. Comes back again. So it makes sense for Matthew to connect this human experience into the experience of the people of Israel, his audience. So he's gone for 40 days into the wilderness with the spirits where he was tempted by the devil. Not until he had fasted, and that unlocks the key for us in Lent. So before the big battle starts, there is the time of preparation. There is the fasting, the 40 days. And so we experience it, or we try to experience that at this particular time. And of course we know the big battle is won, and that's what we celebrate at Easter, the resurrection. So Jesus has, in a sense, put on his armour to prepare himself for battle. And we're told of the conversation. It's a verbal competition, really, between the devil and between Jesus. Firstly, about food. Secondly, really about security, and the security that comes through knowledge. And the third thing is really about power, power over the world. You ask yourself now, perhaps, what are the things, or where are the areas in my life where I really get tempted? You may need to move beyond the Garden of Eden, because that's the first time the word naked is mentioned in Scripture, but it seems to be the thing that is thrust up all the time when people talk about temptation. It is one temptation, what we would call the sexual sins. It is simply one. The greater ones, in some sense, probably come through the everydayness of our life, particularly reinforced since the 1850s by advertising. Now, I don't know whether advertising is the work of the devil, but I know that it can be, because in advertising we are told that we are deficient in some way, shape or form. Our life is simply incomplete because we either do not have this thing, or we are not this archetypical person. And the temptation is to make me a better person in the eyes of the world by having this thing or being this person. And that's a constant temptation that is really put up before us a lot. And now, in 2020, and before, of course, is the mixing of what we would have called the sexual temptations and advertising. When you bring those two together, what you get is pornography, of course, and the destruction that follows on from that. So in a sense, there is an historical link back to the Garden of Eden, if you want to get hooked up on the nakedness. But it is the conversation where people get tripped up. It is the wanting or the desiring to be something that we're not. And we are created in the image and likeness of God, which is pure goodness. And that is our destiny. And every now and then we trip up, or others trip us up, quite often when we're vulnerable. And that's why the 40 days is important, because that made Jesus vulnerable. He was hungry, we're told that. And when we're vulnerable, we are very, very susceptible to the works and the words of evil in the world. And so we need to be on guard. So Lent is also a time to go into training and get ourselves spiritually fit again. I think the worst temptation is out of power. And power is so disruptive because it is exercised in a very human way, by not just belittling another person or other people, but it is exercising or trying to exercise a control over them, which is what the devil was trying to do. And of course Jesus won that battle as well, or that conversation. Knowledge, of course, and the security, that temptation in there, well, you know, it's constantly before us as well, but they're not dangerous things in themselves. It's what we do with them that becomes the real problem. with that knowledge and that position of authority, perhaps. It's what we do with those things that we will be judged on, we're told, in biblical language. But that's where our temptations probably come to the fore the most. I read somewhere some time ago that the scientists of the world got together and they said, listen, we are so clever now, we can clone human beings, we can make miracles happen, we can do all of this stuff. We do not need God anymore. So they walked up and they confronted God and they said, God, you're surplus to needs. We do not need you anymore. We can do all this stuff. And God thought about that and then he said, well, okay, let's just have a little test then. Let's go back to the beginning and let's make man and woman. And the scientists all said, oh, that's not a problem. We can easily do that, easily do that. And God stood there and, okay. But let's make it a little bit more challenging. Let's do it the way that it was done in the beginning, the way it was done in olden days. Let's make man and woman that way. Ah, that's not a problem, said the scientists, as they bent down to pick up the dirt. And God said, oh, no. You get your own dirt. And it's quite a good reminder that before we came to such understandings as we do now, there was something before us. There was a truth before us. There was goodness before us. And that's our destiny, to end up experiencing that truth and that goodness. That's what we're created for. And be prepared, as I say, for being tripped up along the way and sometimes tripping others up along the way. And that's why we have the sacraments of the church, particularly reconciliation, to help dust us down, to help quench our little thirst, to get up again and bravely and courageously march forward into the goodness in which God has created us.